Hey, the Environment, Economic Development, and Agricultural Division for April 11th, 2013 will come to order. I know people are still getting copies of the bill out in the hall, and I don't know if they're going to come back in here after they get the copies or not, but for the ones who are in here, what we're planning on doing today is just have the staff go through the bill and explain the articles and the provisions in the bill. There's no numbers in the bill yet because the spreadsheets are kind of being worked out yet. And in fact, some of the language in the bill is probably not what it's supposed to be, and maybe needs some digging up in here and there. And some of the provisions in the bill probably will change before Monday, so we get them right, so that when they come out in actual bill form with all the numbers, the bill will be what we'll be working off of. When we get done with the committee today, the bill will be posted online at the website of the committee hearing announcement, and so you can see it there. And then we don't need to take any testimony today because the bill is brand new, and it's really not going to need testimony until Monday if people want to comment on it. And Monday will be the time where if there are amendments or if there needs to be other changes to the bill other than what we have is when we'll start entertaining it. And then Monday is the plan is to pass it out on Monday and get it up to the Finance Committee. So with that, let's did I forget to say anything?
No.
Who wants to go first here?
I guess so.
Okay, so Mr. Knopf will start out with which article, Mr. Knopf?
Well, Mr. Chair, well, the agriculture article doesn't have a number on the top, but it's GK0019. But we can start going through that. And I just wanted to clarify something the chair just said, that the riders in here will reflect the spreadsheet. If there may be riders in here that we have in here now that don't show up later on because that they don't have the money for them, the spreadsheet will drive that. We may need to create riders if money is transferred to the spreadsheet, things like that. But I'll go through the riders and we'll make sure and show you which ones are base riders and which ones are new. Mr. Chair and members, you can start. There's really nothing to talk about on page one.
Excuse me. Can everybody hear?
I'll bring the mic over a little closer, Mr. Chair.
And can everybody kind of...
Let me get the door shut, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Can we kind of quiet down in here so that we can hear the explanation of the bill? I know you're all just getting this for the first time, but if you have to whisper with somebody, can you just kind of take it out in the hallway and kibitz, or if you're inside the room, can you kind of just be quiet so everybody can hear what he's saying? So, okay, Mr. Knopf.
And so, Mr. Chair, and if you look on page two, those are base riders for the voluntary cleanup program. And then also we've got the wolf depredation and the elk depredation programs on 2.8 and 2.14. We've got the laboratory services on 2.26. And then we've got the Minnesota Grown account at 2.31. That's a base rider. The laboratory services is new. It's the increase in operating. Again, we'll be changing these depending on how the spreadsheet comes out. 3.7, that's a rider for the ag in the classroom. That's similar to what we had in 2011. On 315, that's the cost share payments for the organic certification program. And you'll notice we don't have the one for sustainable agriculture, and I'm going to show you later because that program is being transferred over to Agri, and I think that was even the plan of the agency, so we don't have the rider for the sustainable ag grant program. If you look on page four, that's the bioenergy and value added. The first rider is the standard kind of one for the department on 4.5 to 4.19. 4.20, we've got a vice chair's proposal. There are certain people who are eligible for a pilot agricultural microloan program. And what this would do would be to say that they can use this money to provide additional assistance in addition to the microloans. And then 4.25 to 4.27, that's the program transfer that says money appropriate may be used for sustainable agriculture grants under that section. 4.28, this was in the governor's bill, and this is the next gen part saying that money can be used for the next gen energy program. Starting at the bottom of page five, and I won't go through the details on the riders, you can read those. Bottom of page five, this is the start of the Weber bill, Senate file 914, but it has some changes. I'll go through each one of the clauses and mention where they come from. Clause one was from the Weber bill. Clause 2 on 6.3, that was from Senator Sparks' bill, Senate File 1001 on the Mielsi. For the farm business management, there's a little additional language in here to kind of clarify what it's to be used for. Clause 3 is from Senate File 914, Senator Weber's bill. Clause 4 is also from Senator Weber's 914. And then there's also money on in Clause 5. This is another vice chair's proposal. This is the actual micro-loan, the pilot agricultural micro-loan program. I think there was about $100,000 put in there last year for this. It was a transfer from an agroforestry loan program. And this would transfer some additional money, and that will be on the spreadsheet, how much money to transfer into that microloan program. Section 6, this is for states, county fairs, for arts access. This was Senator Thomasoni had a bill, Senate File 560, and this is a portion of that. And then in Clause 7, Senator Westrom's bill, Senate File 1411, this is kind of fitting that into the Weber proposal in the same manner for the City of Morris for an agriculture processing facility. And then the remainder of that paragraph is just tied into the to that program for the Clause 7. Subdivision 5, now there's a number of standard riders. I'll just mention each one as we go through, especially for newer members. We've got a rider that starts on 7.11, the Dairy Development and Profitability Enhancement. That's a base rider for that. We also have money for the Northern Crops Institute on 8.1. That's a base rider. Minnesota Livestock Breeders, the next one's a base rider. The MEAL-C, the regular money that flows through, that's a base rider. The money for the Ag Societies and Associations, that's a base rider in 8.13. 8.23 for the State Poultry Association, that's a base rider. The Turf Seed Council in 8.26 is a base rider. The Second Harvest for milk purchases and donations, that's on 9.3, that's a base rider. On 9.33, the transfer to MinSCU for statewide mental health for farmers. From farm families, that's a base rider. And then on 10.5, the Minnesota Horticultural Society, that's a base rider. And then on 10.8, that's another base rider where that's the extra money that was added to the fertilizer inspection fee. And then that goes toward, basically goes toward research and the certain panel that the Education Council that provides for that. Section 4, that's just a line for the Board of Animal Health. Section 5 is a line for the AURI. Section 6, this was in the agency bit, the governor's recommendation. This was Senator Schmidt's bill, 845. And that was contained in the governor's proposal. Section 7 on promotional expenditures, and these were heard in the agriculture, the Jobs and Agriculture Committee. And then Section 7 is a promotional expenditures, allowing them to basically do the same manner as where they get the money from. This allows them to spend the money as proposed by the person who's giving them the money. And then Section 8, this was a bill of Senator Marty's, deals with pesticide education and training. This tells the department to expand their education and training. And if I remember right, this costs about $100,000 a year, but they have a statutory appropriation to do this. And this updates that. Section 9, a commercial animal waste technician. The chair gets to carry a bill with a commercial animal waste technician in it. sorry.
Some kind of technician, anyway.
Mr. Chair, what is a commercial animal?
And so,
I'd like to get me a definition. We can put it in.
And so, Mr. Chair, these were all in Senator Schmidt's Senate File 845. It was recommended by the agency. This is basically kind of laying out. They've worked out with the industry on how on the different types of licenses that are going to be offered under this. And there's a little bit of money the state, additional money the state will collect under these changes. And that goes all the way through page 14, and then to the top of page 15, you can see the license application fee change. Also section 10 is from that bill, and it's a technical change related to it. Section 11 was part of Senate File 550, Senator Marty's, and it deals with the report and the requirement to update basically the training, the manual for training for pesticide applicators by December 31st, 2017. And, Mr. Chair, that's the agriculture article.
Okay. Do any of the members have any clarifying questions of any of the language you might have just looked at or anything that Mr. Knopf just said? If not, Senator Dibble.
Yes, Mr. Chair, on the I can't remember. I lost track of it. Bioenergy and value-added ag, where we've got all these riders. I seem to recall that the agency didn't want any riders, but I told them that probably wasn't going to happen. But are we going to leave any money available for them to do their competitive grant?
Are you talking about the agri stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, they got most of it.
Okay, all right.
They got about 3/4 of it, I think.
Great, thanks.
And, Mr. Chair, I'll go on to the Environment and Natural Resources article. It's a GK-0022. It also says Article 1, Environment and Natural Resources Appropriations. Don't worry about the article numbering. We'll be putting this all in one bill, and they'll have the appropriate articles. We'll figure out the order. There's really nothing to talk about on page 1, kind of standard language. We're getting into the Pollution Control Agency now. Okay. And if you look subdivision 2, we start with water. The first rider on 2.13, that's the delegated county feedlot program. 2.19, that's the continued activity of new technology review. That's a base rider. 2.29, that's the Clean Water Partnership. That's a base rider. 3.4 is the SSTS program administration, community technical assistance. That's a base rider. 3.16 for the Environmental Fund for registration of wastewater. That's part of the new proposal in the governor's bill that will have the wastewater laboratories the ability to register with the, and we'll see some language later. There's some language that's been traveling through the Senate that we'll see that ties into that. 3.19 to 3.29 is the chair's proposal, and it deals with them testing peat-based products for control of oil spills and to report back by January 15th of next year. Including an analysis of the cost to maintain stocks of peat-based materials in strategic locations in the state. And, Mr. Chair, bottom of page 3, that's kind of standard language that we allow some of these grants to carry forward if they're not used by a certain date, as long as they're encumbered by that date. And then, Mr. Chair, we have the air quality provisions on subdivision 3. The base rider for the monitoring program on 4.7 to 4.10. And then we've got the Small Business Environmental Improvement Loan Program on 4.11. That's a base rider. Now, we have a base rider on 4.17, but there is some additional language that the chair asked to have included on 4.21 to 4.22. This is kind of related. Senator Dibble has a bill dealing with mobile monitoring equipment, and this was to put some language in there allowing them to use this money for purchasing the mobile monitoring equipment. It's not as much language as what's in the bill, but it would allow this money to be used for that purpose. And we'll see how much money is in there on Monday. And Mr. Chair, members, the next rider is for emission reduction activities to small business, grants to small business and other non-point emission reduction efforts. Subdivision 4 is the land program. The first rider is our standard kind of Superfund rider appropriating money for environmental response and compensation and compliance under the Superfund section. Or the next rider in 5.16 is for the underground storage tank program, the part that the PCA does. Commerce gives out the money for people who clean up their tanks, and this is the money that's actually spent by the agency in regulating and enforcing those standards. 5.22, the rider there, we have included there. That's become kind of a base rider with money being transferred to the Commissioner of Health for private water supply monitoring, and that's been with us for a while. Subdivision 5, the Environmental Assistance Cross Media. We've got a number of base riders in here. On 6.1 to 6.3, those are the SCORE block grants. And for members who don't know this program, these are there's a formula for grants to counties. That's been in place since 1989. And SCORE stood for Select Committee on Recycling and the Environment. So those are the SCORE grants. You'll see money showing up in that area later. Mr. Chair, we've got the environmental assistance grants in 6.4. That's a base rider. 6.12 is a related to harmful chemicals. That's been in since 2007, I think. Mr. Chair, we've got the feedlot program for over 1,000 animal units. That was put in several years ago, and we continue to carry that here. 6.23, again, is a rider that we've carried sometimes. But in recent years, we've been doing this with the Environmental Fund. This is the biomonitoring. And this includes the kind of the agency language that suggested, but also Senator Sieben had presented a bill, I think it was earlier this week, Senate File 785. And this would include the language from her bill to continue perfluorochemical biomonitoring, or PFCs. So it basically merges it all into one. And then, Mr. Chair, on the bottom of that page, Environmental Fund for the EQB operations, that's a new rider that would be carried if the EQB is funded out of the Environmental Fund in this bill. And then, Mr. Chair, the next one is for the Office of Administrative Hearings. We're going to see some language later. There's actually a large article that transfers the wastewater treatment sanitary districts and being transferred from PCA. That bill's been traveling through the Senate. I think a lot of members have heard about it. And then, Mr. Chair, this is the solid waste landfill fee for the metropolitan area on 7.7. This is a base rider that basically says that it appropriates some money for the purposes of that statute in 473, and it stays in the metro area and it's appropriated for that for waste activities in the metropolitan area. And then, Mr. Chair, the next rider is another I think I would call that a chair's proposal to prepare and submit a report basically with recommendations for a statewide recycling refund program for beverage containers that achieves an 80% recycling rate. You can see that language on 7.20 to 7.22. The next rider is a base rider for the e-waste program. And then the next one is related to Senator Schmidt's bill that we heard last night. And instead of having the individual appropriations, what this does is it just appropriates money in the first and second year for the new duties related to silica sand mining in this act. And we'll see in the next article what portions of, and that was, it's related to what was in, well, both bills had appropriations. But these would be from the Environmental Fund. It also allows a transfer to a portion of it for duties of the Commissioner of Natural Resources, Health and Transportation for silica sand mining activities. And then again, we've got the standard language for on 8.1 to give them some additional time when they need it for if they've been encumbered, because otherwise the money would cancel back to the fund. Subdivision 6 is administrative support. Subdivision 7, remediation fund. This is, we've been carrying this on every 2 years. It allows some of the environment, a big portion of the environmental fund, to be transferred to the remediation fund, because the money is collected, put in the, there are some resources that go into the remediation fund, but most of the money is collected into the environmental fund, and a lot of it is used out of the remediation fund for all the cleanup activities. And this does a transfer, or allows for the transfer of the, this says up to $46 million during the biennium to the remediation fund. We get into natural resources. At the top of page 9, I'll go through the riders here again. This is the Minerals Cooperative Environmental Research. That's a base rider. The Cooperative Research on 9.14 is a base rider. The Minerals Management Account money is a base rider on 9.25. The forest suspense account, we've been doing this for a number of years for to accelerate land exchanges and land sales, and that's on 9.33. That's a base rider that's been in for a while. 10.10, we had a DNR request to extend the 2007 appropriation for land records management systems. This was a 2007 appropriation. It's amended in 2009 and extended in 2011, and they're asking for another extension until June 30th of 2015. And then, Mr. Chair, Subdivision 3 is Ecological and Water Resources. The first rider is our invasive species rider on 10.24. And then on 11.3, we've got the water management account rider. 11.8 to 11.13, that's the Mississippi Headwaters Board grant. And then a similar payment, it goes along with that, is the payment to the Leech Lake Band for their portion of the comprehensive plan for the Upper Mississippi. And then 11.19, the Red River Remediation Agreement, that's a standard base rider. And then we have money for the purposes of Heritage Enhancement Account and the Game and Fish Fund. That's been a base rider, as I understand it. And then, Mr. Chair, we got a portion of the non-game wildlife in here, 11.34. And then on the top, then we get into forest management. 12.14, that's the direct appropriation for prevention, pre-suppression, and suppression. But then you'll see that on 12.22, that's usually never enough to cover all of the forest firefighting activity. So on 12.22, that's the open appropriation to the DNR from the general fund for forest firefighting in the state. And then 13.1, the forest management investment account rider, that's base rider. Ecological classification system on 13.7, that's a base rider. 13.13 is the money for the Forest Resources Council, base rider. Same with 13.17, the forest system. That's a computerized system dealing with managing forests in the state. Mr. Chair, we get into parks and trails in subdivision 5. We've got the water recreation account for public water access facilities, the first rider, that's a base rider. Then we've got the money from the lottery in lieu for state park and trail and recreation areas, that's 13.29. And then 14.1, we have these are the local trail grants under the from the lottery in lieu money. And then we've got the snowmobile trails and enforcement account grant and aid program on 14.12. 14.19 is the off-highway vehicle grant and aid program.
Thank you.
14.29, this was a request of the DNR this year. Generally, the money from the cross-country skiing account goes out for grant and aid. They're requesting, if I remember right, the request is about $75,000 a year to maintain the state trails. And then 14.34, that's a rider from the water rec account. With Senator Bach's bill, Senate File 351, we heard in committee earlier this session. And then we have another provision on 15.6 that was a DNR request. There was some money in 2009 that would cancel back, and apparently they haven't been able to get the project complete. This is a grant program. I think this is the City of White Bear, if I remember right. This would allow them to carry that forward and to complete that project. Mr. Chair, Fish and Wildlife Management, we've got the money from the Heritage Enhancement Account. That's the lottery and lieu money. 15.17, and then we've got the critical habitat private sector matching account allowing them to publicize that. Otherwise, most of their money will be coming from the Game and Fish Fund. You'll see that in the spreadsheet on Monday. Enforcement, subdivision 7. Top of page 16, we've got the aquatic invasive species for enforcement efforts, and then we've got the money from the Heritage Enhancement Account, that's the lottery in lieu. And then, Mr. Chair, on 1613, the pre-employment education program, this was a DNR initiative that we heard earlier this year. And then, Mr. Chair, we've got the money from the Water Rec Account for, these are the counties for boat and water safety on 16.24. And then we have money for grants to local law enforcement on 16.31 from the Snowmobile Trails Account. And then we have... the 17.4 is the money from the all-terrain vehicle account for qualifying organizations for safety, environmental education, and monitoring trails on public lands. That's a base rider. 17.23, that's a base rider for local law for county law enforcement agency for off-highway vehicle enforcement. And then we have a chair's proposal for a new rider related to this. It's on 18.7, which is money from the Game and Fish Fund for grants to county law enforcement agencies for invasive species enforcement. And then, Mr. Chair, we have operations support. The first rider, this is the lottery and lieu money that goes to the Como Park Zoo and the City of Duluth for the Duluth Zoo. 18.24, that's a DNR initiative to improve data analytics. And then, Mr. Chair, Section 5 is the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and we have a number of base grants, or base riders in here. 19.1 is the Natural Resources Block Grants that go out to local governments for managing state programs. 19.16 are the grants to soil and water conservation districts for general purposes and non-point engineering. 19.30 are the soil and water for cost-sharing contracts to SWCDs. And then top of page 20, we've got the money for the oversight of the Wetland Conservation Act. The next rider is for the local drainage management, including the cost of the drainage work group. 20.8 is Red River Basin Commission grant another base rider. Area 2, and we've heard from them this session, 20.15, that's a base rider for Area 2. 20.18 is the Minnesota River Board, that's another base rider. And then 20.22 is a base rider that basically tells local counties that they really shouldn't be shifting cost share funds away based on the state's one to address. This allows the board to. I'm sorry, that was a different rider. And Mr. Chair, then we've got some money for local governments to transition to local water plants. This is another board initiative. This was in the commissioner's bill. It's just included here. We'll see if it shows up in the spreadsheet. Anything new, I mean, it'll depend on what's in the spreadsheet.
We'll see.
And Mr. Chair, on 21.3, this is internal control. That was another one of the initiatives from the governor. And then 21.7 gives them flexibility in their grant programs, allowing them to use the money in each year. Section 6 is the Metropolitan Council, and they have two standard riders. The first one is related to the general fund portion of what they receive, and the second rider is the lottery and lieu money that's received by the Met Council for parks and Metropolitan Regional Parks and Trails. Conservation Corps, you'll see they have a rider that they get some money from the Natural Resources Fund, and what the rider says that they can only use it as provided in agreement with the Commissioner of Natural Resources. So they work out what the money from the Natural Resources, this is the fee money in the Natural Resources Fund, they work out what the money can be used for before the Conservation Corps of Minnesota can spend it. Then we've got the Zoo Board, and the only rider you see there is the specific money from the lottery and lieu. They also get general fund money, but the rider is related to the lottery and lieu money. You'll see a science museum with no rider. You do see in Section 10, you see a chair's proposal to change the payback into the closed landfill investment fund. There was a payback required after 2010 legislation because that money was used during the times of the deficit. And this is just altering the payback slightly for the future. It's when each portion of that payback is to occur. And, Mr. Chair, that is the article on the Environment Natural Resources Appropriation.
Any clarifying or interesting questions from committee members? Okay. Senator Ingebretson.
Real quickly, Mr. Knopf, page 16, can you just refresh me on the pre-employment education program there on line 16, 15? I don't know if you want those kind of questions asked, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead. You can let them know what it is.
Well, Mr. Chair, this was a DNR initiative. When they were going through their initiatives, they talked about additional assistance for people before they're employed by DNR. They're going through the training to become conservation officers, and this would provide them additional assistance. I even think they talked about some housing stipends and things like that. This is an initiative of the agencies. They did discuss this to some extent. I don't remember how much, but in committee while we were hearing the DNR's budget.
Mr. Chair, and the second one was on page 13, the forest system. That's something new. Maybe I missed these when I wasn't here or something. We can certainly talk about them later.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, it's so easy to forget some of these things.
Yeah.
that's been in there for quite a while, and as I understand it, it's a computer system that they track their forestry activities. But
thanks.
It's been in there for quite a while.
All right, thanks.
You know what the acronym means?
I don't.
Okay. What's next?
And Mr. Chair, we can go on. There's one unlabeled Article 2. It's Environment Natural Resources statutory changes. And Mr. Chair, I can probably go through this pretty quickly. It's a large document, but most of these things have come from other things that most people around here have seen. There's the Product Stewardship Bill, Senator Eaton's Bill 639. We've got a number of provisions in here from that. That first section is from that bill. It's gone through the committee process, is in finance. Section 2 is also in Senate File 889. That was Senator Marty's bill. Was heard in committee. It has gone traveled through the process, is in finance. Section 3, Senator Scoy's bill on 16 road right-of-way the fee exemption for utilities, and that's Senate File 333. That's Section 3 in this document. And then we got a number of provisions. Senator Saxhog has a bill, Senate File 1292, the forestry bill. Most of the pieces in there were recommended by the agency and has traveled through the process and been amended. And this is as it was referred to finance. So that's Section 4. is from that Section 5. This was in Senate File 889. This was a Marty bill. This allows non-trail use registration for a lesser fee. We rolled in the trail sticker a few years ago, and what this does is it allows people, if they're not going to ride on a trail, that they can get a reduced fee registration for snowmobiles. Mr. Chair, Section 6 was also... And Section 6 and 7 are really related to that change. So they're, and they were part of Senate File 889 as it traveled through, heard in the Policy Committee. Section 8, dealing with the Arrowhead Regional Trails, that was in Senate File 889. It was a request by the department. Section 9 was also in 889, and that was to allow the parks to collect the money up front and then pay the contractor. Section 10, this was an amendment to Senate File 889. It is as the bill is in Finance Committee, and this was to recognize the federal annual pass for military and their dependents at our state parks to allow them in for free. And then Section 11 was also from 889 dealing with LaSalle Lake, saying that you only need the park permit when you're using the more park-like facilities there. And then Section 12 on the top of page 6, that's a very technical amendment related to a change that was made last year. Section 13, again, this deals with the fee deposit and parks. This was in Senate File 889. So was Section 14 was in 889, deals with a duplicate pass. Section 15, now we're going to get, and I'll go through these fairly quickly. I don't know how, if you want to go through what was in the Saxhog bill on forestry. It's a fairly lengthy bill with a lot of provisions. I think I'll just go through them quickly, and if people have questions, but there were a number of provisions. One was a forest management investment account. That's Section 15. This allows transfers at a more rate other than annually. Section 16 deals with the establishment of school forests and kind of clarifies the process for that. Sections 17, 18, 19, 20, we're making some changes to the and 21 to definitions within the timber statutes. These are basically what the state sells timber under Chapter 90, and so there's a number of changes that were requested of the agency. 22 is also deals with timber rules. 23, trespass on state lands. 24 is forest improvement contracts. 25 is sale of damaged timber. 26 is reoffering unsold timber. There's some fee language related to this in Section 27. And then some debarment language. Now, these did travel through, and Senator Saxhog's bill through state and local government and through judiciary. So those are provisions that are the way they are in the Finance Committee, travel through those committees. Appraisal standards on Section 29, appraiser authority. Section 31 is sale requirements. 32 is intermediate auction sales. Section 33 is purchaser qualifications. 34, insurance expiration. 35, permit requirements. Section 36, security provisions. Section 37, permit terms. 38 is notice and approval. 39 is liability for timber cut and trespass. And again, most of these are minor and fairly technical changes, so I won't go through each individual change. Section 40 is suspension. 41 is slashing disposal. Section 42 is security deposits. It used to say surety bonds, but this is now it's being revamped to security deposits. I think this would be more of one of the more substantial changes in here, besides some of those that I mentioned earlier. Dealing with how that what security is required when you bid on timber, on state timber. And then Section 43, securing timber permits without cutting blocks, fairly minor. Section 44, timber permit development option. That's a new provision in the timber sales statute, pre-sale conference requirement. With the completion that they may access the permit, in advance of the permit being fully secured, something they had not been able to do before that. Section 45 is assignment of auction timber permits. Section 46 deals with deferred payments. Again, these are fairly minor changes related to those. 47 are the sale requirements. Section 48 are the extension of timber permits. Section 49 is a special use and product permit. Section 50 is prompt payment of refunds. Section 51, purchase money when forfeited. Section 52, timber sales records. Section 53, consumer scaling. 54, seizure of unlawfully cut timber. 55, apprehension of trespassers. 56 is violations and penalties. Now, that's the end at this point. There's some more provisions you'll see later because of the statutory order that were in Senator Saxog's bill. But now on Section 57, this is something, Senator Tomasoni, this is in your governor's bill that you introduced. It defines scram mining for the purpose of the mining law. I think it's been in rule in places, but I think this is the first time it's been defined in the statutes. And this was recommended by the agency to be placed in the mining statutes. In fact, in Section 58, the term is used, and that's where it basically says the term for scram mining permit for iron ore taconite shall be determined the same manner as a permit to mine for iron ore taconite mining. So it's basically making them the same as far as the terms. Section 59, this is a little modified version of what was in Senate File 1170. The Drill Corps Library Access, it says that consistent with the data practices law, a person shall not be required to pay a fee to access exploration data and that the library shall be open during regular business hours. This is a chair's modified version of an agency recommendation. And Mr. Chair, Section 60, this was in Senator Marty's bill on taking a possession. It allows people to... wildlife rehabilitators to possess and transport wildlife affected by oil spills. Section 61, I mentioned this earlier, going through the riders, the wastewater laboratory certification. This is new language. Currently, the Department of Health, this was also in Senator Harris' bill, Senate File 423, and it's in the Department of Health, but this would allow waste laboratories to be certified by the Pollution Control Agency. Originally, I think it was only done by that, but there was some language that was added at the request of some of the cities, and the agency worked out some language to allow continuation under the Commissioner of Health, at least temporarily. So it's slightly modified than what was in here, just mostly on line on 25.14 and 25.15 and 25.21 and 25.22. There were some slight modifications to that language requested by the cities and the agency. Section 62, that was in Senator Hurst's bill, deals with duties of the agency. You'll see the changes on the top of page 27. This is just their consolidated report and puts that into the same place that a lot of other reports are in one consolidated report from the agency. Now, in Section 63, we've got two sections in a row here that were both in Senator Eaton's bill on the stewardship. This is the architectural paint stewardship plan. And this is as the bill came to the Finance Committee, Senate File 639, except there's a slight modification dealing with an appropriation. The money wasn't appropriated in the bill. It was just collected, and it needs to be appropriated somehow. So what this does is at least for the next two fiscal years, it provides a statutory appropriation, basically saying whatever they collect under these programs, the fees that they collect from these groups, that's annually appropriated for these 2 years. They'll have to come back in 2015 and either get an extension of the statutory appropriation or a direct appropriation for that purpose. This was something similar to what we did with the e-waste program is make it a temporary statutory appropriation, and just in case they collect more or less than what they think they're going to collect. Section 64, this is the same provision basically with primary batteries. This is as the bill arrived in committee, except again on page 39.16, the same language is included for the statutory appropriation. The report requirement on Section 65, that was in Senator Hurst's bill, or no, that was in Senator Eaton's bill, excuse me, that's Senate File 639. And the report to the legislature on 66, that was in Senator Hurst's bill, Senate File 423, again, traveled through the committee process, and this is just consolidating some of the report requirements. The same with And then Section 68, that's a real technical provision, just to eliminate some obsolete language from the Closed Landfill Investment Fund. Section 69, there are several provisions in here now that was in Senator Hurst's agency bill, in Senate File 423. 69 deals with corrective action under the underground tank law. Section 70. Also deals with the underground tank law. Again, there were a number of provisions people have probably seen dealing with allowing the bigger things on the bottom, page 41, is where allow environmental covenants and other issues when they after they've done the cleanup. And then Section 71, this deals with disposition of property. And this is what Senator Herr's bill also, Senate Bill 423, and this allows the agency. The agency has similar authority under the Superfund law. This would have that authority also under the petroleum tank law. Section 72 is also in Senator Herr's bill. That's a toxic pollution prevention evaluation report. We're just lining that up with the consolidated report. Section 73, this was also in Senate File 423, deals with an affidavit. This is the regulation of the underground and above ground storage tanks by the Pollution Control Agency. And this is, again, as it was heard. Section 74, this is, you heard this last night. This was in Senator Schmidt's Senate File 1018. And, Mr. Chair, you will notice I did leave the mining definition in, but took out the word. We don't define mining anymore with mining. Mining is mining, but yeah, and so, but that's in there. There was a slight change on page 46. There was some language, and I didn't talk to Senator Schmidt about this. I guess he's not in here, but it was very specific about who's on this panel, and this allows more flexibility. And then there was also a question about the grammatical sense and how it was where it says majority from a state agency. This now clarifies that and all members must have expertise, not a portion of the members, as was discussed last night. And then, Mr. Chair, Section 75 was also from Senate File 1018, Senator Schmidt's bill. Section 76, 77, and 78 were in the governor's budget. They weren't in the original bill, but this is language to effectuate the transfer of the Environmental Quality Board to the Pollution Control Agency. And then, Mr. Chair, Section 79 on page 48, this was from Senator Saxog bill. We're dealing with tax forfeited lands here, and this was a part of the children's forest where we had the school forest in the state. And it's kind of clarifying how that works with the tax forfeited lands. And you'll see the change is actually all the way over on page 51. Adding a new paragraph to a long list of paragraphs. And, Mr. Chair, and that's basically allowing it to be conveyed for a governmental subdivision for a school forest. And then Section 80 deals with a reversionary interest, and that had to be modified because under current law, these reversionary interests for tax forfeited land expire after 30 years. And if you look on page 52, you'll see on 52.29, let's see, for the school forest, there will be a perpetual conditional use deed, which means that it will revert if it's not ever used for anything other than a school forest, and it won't expire after 30 years. And then, Mr. Chair, there's a chair's proposal on Section 81, and this would allow counties selling timber on tax forfeited lands to use a similar intermediate timber sales auction or type of auction for on these tax forfeited lands that are managed by the county, owned by the state but managed by the county. And so this includes it limits on who can bid on those intermediate timber sales. And so it allows counties to use the process. It's very, very similar to the process that you'll see in Chapter 90 for the state lands. Section 52, this is a Metro Council report, and this is also was in Senator Herr's bill on Senate File 423. Section 83 was a bill of Senator Dietzick, Senate File 1476, deals with the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. Section 84 is also something with the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board, and that's a North Mississippi Regional Park. Senator Champion just introduced a bill, 1581, on that topic. And that's included here. Section 85, that was in Senator Saxog's bill dealing with timber permit cancellations for balsam fir. Section 86 is a rulemaking authority from it was in Senate File 89, Senator Marty's bill dealing with that change in the for the wildlife rehabilitators from oil spills. Section 87 was in Senate File 889, and that was dealing with where to put license numbers on paddle boards. Or actually to exempt them from having to put them on. Section 88, this is the rules provision that was in Senator Schmidt's bill, 1018, that we heard last night. It also includes, and we'll get to the next page, the first A, B, and C were in the bill last night, the rulemaking. Paragraph D was all was in Senator Schmidt's 786, and that's the EQB amending the environmental review rules to update them for silica sand mining. And using the, and that did travel in Senator Schmidt's bill, went through the state and local government committee. Section 89 was also in 786, had gone through the committee process, and that's the interim ordinance extension and renewal for silica sand mining processing and transfer facilities. I think we got a bad cross-reference there. We'll have to fix that. And then, Mr. Chair, we have a number of repealers. And what I want to do is I brought copies. I don't know if everybody in the crowd needs to have one, but I've got copies of all the repealed language. If you want to hand that out, I can go through what's in there. But the first three are statutory repealers, and they are one is a they were all in Senator Saxhog's timber bill, and dealing with the performance deposit option, purchasers, assigners, cash deposit in lieu of bond, and the state appraiser and scaler. Again, you saw the modifications related to when they, what they need to have. So these were actually in the department's bill, and then also carried through by Senator Saxhog. Section, the next one is the law section, and you'll see that there was a state nursery program restructuring that was in Senator Saxhog's bill, and it made some modifications to that law from 2011. What this does is has a repeal of that law from 2011, which is the law did was different from if you were reading the statutes, you wouldn't know some of the stuff without knowing that this law existed. It's different than the statute. So we go back to the statutory construction about how state nurseries are managed. And so that's in there. And then there's a number of rules that are being requested by the Pollution Control Agency. I don't know that I want to go through all of these. They actually were carried in Senator Herr's bill, so they've been out there for a while. It's all provisions that the Pollution Control Agency feel are obsolete. And so, again, you can read those at your leisure if you really feel like it. But there's a number of rules that the agency has requested a repeal, and that's what those are. So you've got a list and the language from all of those. And Mr. Chair, that's the end of this article.
Anybody notice anything they'd like to ask any questions about? Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Just the repealer on the Senator Saxhog's state nursery program. Did we talk about that at all in committee, or was that in?
Mr. Chair, Senator Saxhog, in Senator Marty's committee, it was discussed the change to the law, but not the repeal. But this, the chair's proposal here has it just repealing the law rather than making the statute, rather than modifying it.
Okay. And Senator Westbrook.
To that point, what is the net effect of that? I know in the past that was an area that the DNR hasn't been as competitive in direct competition with private nurseries. Do we restore all of that? Do we restore some of it? I think one of them exists up in Senator Saxhog's district, or maybe your district, Mr. Chair, but just for insight, what
Senator Scoy's
repealed
district.
Senator Scoy's district?
Bedore, yeah, that's my district.
And, well, Mr. Chair, it would go back to the statutory law on who they can sell to. There are restrictions, and there's restrictions on how much they can sell. There are restrictions on how they can be sold. They do a number of sales to soil and water conservation districts. That's the original provision Senator Saxhog's bill was trying to deal with, getting back to those sales to soil and water conservation districts. So there are specific statutory provisions allowing those sales to SWCDs. So instead of this law kind of overriding the statute, now it would go back to letting them manage it under the statutory provisions rather than under the provisions from 2011.
It's coming to the tax committee.
And Mr. Knopf, these repealed rules, are they being repealed because they haven't been used, or they're no longer?
Mr. Chair, the agency recommended the repeal of those rules as being obsolete. You know, there's a requirement that for agencies to bring to the legislature obsolete rules every 2 years, and remember, it's every 2 years. And this was the PCA's offering this year of rules that they find obsolete that aren't necessary anymore.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, who's next?
Well, I've got one more article. It's a large article, but I'm not going to go through it. Mr. Chair, it's the sanitary district. We talked a little bit about the rider for this. Currently, the Pollution Control Agency approves sanitary districts, so they're transferring this to the Office of Administrative Hearings rather than have, and so there's a lot of language. There's actually, 39 pages, I think, of language that'll be in this article. But it's all tied. There's money tied to it, so it needs to be part of this bill. It was in Senator Hur's bill, Senate File 423, and this has been worked out. There was a technical amendment that I added to it from what came into the Finance Committee. It had to do with it misreferenced cities when it should have said political subdivisions or something to that effect, and so that those changes were made. They're very minor technical changes, but otherwise, this was part of Senator Hur's bill, Senate File 423, and we're going to include this as a separate article. Again, I see no reason to go through the language. It's really kind of recodified and repackaged, and it's gone through all the committee process. And it's here today, and I don't think that's any extra positive that's not.
Chair, it looks to me like you might make a stop in the tax committee. I'm on page 36, lines 24 and 25.
Mr. Chair and Senator Skoy, that's recodified from currently what's in chapter 115.
So no changes at all?
My understanding is the tax provisions wouldn't have been. There were some changes made to the process in this, but that shouldn't have changed. That should be moving it. There's a current law provision in Chapter 115 that has that already in existence, and this is just a movement into this new chapter.
We'll want to make sure that the rates and that are all the same.
Let me know before Monday.
You're working on it over the weekend, can't you?
We'll be studying it closely. Okay. All right, so sanitary districts are gone. Okay, who's next? Okay, Mr. Mullen.
Mr. Chairman and members, next we'll be doing the article that's titled Commerce and Energy. DM05, it says on the top. This contains the appropriations for the Department of Commerce and the Public Utilities Commission and just a few other statutory changes.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Real quickly, on the document just before that, Senator Skoy made an issue with regards to the tax portion here. The next page, Mr. Knopf, maybe you can answer this, 38, there, when you talk about Chief Administrative Law Judge powers, is that something that has gone through judiciary, I guess, something that I...
Mr. Chair, Senator Hur can speak for his bill if he wants, but this bill has gone through the process.
It did. Okay.
It has gone through and has come to the Finance Committee.
Very good. Thanks.
Mr. Miller.
All right. Mr. Chairman and members, back to the Commerce and Energy article. The first page is just all pretty standard, dealing with the appropriations for the Department of the Commerce. There's no new riders on the first page. On the top of the second page, the first rider is a base rider dealing with mortgage originators. We have the Division of Petroleum Tank Release, and that appropriation will come from the Petroleum Tank Fund. That's base. On Subdivision 4 for Administrative Services, the governor had... We have a rider here that was in last year, or 2 years ago, was in the bill for unclaimed property. And part of the governor's proposal in the Department of Commerce was to continue this service throughout. It was supposed to end after fiscal year 14 and 15. So the rider here does not make it one time, so it would continue it on. Subdivision 5, we have the Division of Telecommunications. We have a new rider on 2.14 and 2.15 that was in the governor's proposal for the Office of Broadband Development. Then we have a base rider on lines 2.16 through 2.23. This allows a transfer for the Telecommunication Access Minnesota Fund to the Commission of Deaf-Blind and Hard of Hearing. This is a base transfer. Then on the next one on 2.24 and Division Enforcement, that's base. There's money that comes out of two different funds for that. Then you'll see on under Energy Resources, there's a new rider here on line 2.3. This is from Senate File 1548, the chairman's bill would for some one-time money for weather on top of the federal weatherization assistance program. And Subdivision 8 is the Division of Insurance within Commerce. No new riders there. On to page 3, you'll see the one-line rider for the Public Utilities Commission. The next we'll have some statutory changes. Section 5 is a modification from a Senate File 652 Senator Metzen that came out of the policy committee, that came out of his policy committee and was is referred to finance. This provision is another section later on, but this allows some of the money that is currently in the auto theft prevention account to be also transferred over to the insurance fraud prevention account. And there's some language in another section that spells that out a little bit better. Section 6 was in the governor's proposal, and the changes on page 4, line 4.12, this raises the appointment fee for insurance agents from $10 to $30. Again, this was in the governor's proposal. This increased amount would go into the general fund. It's about $9 million for the biennium. Section 7 deals with that auto theft prevention account. The changes on page 5, line 31, 32, and 33, this basically allows any unused portion of the auto theft prevention account. It allows the Commissioner of Commerce to transfer any unused balance of that account, not touching the $1.3 million that goes to the general fund, over to the insurance fraud account. So this is a little bit of a modification of what was in Senator Metzen's bill. Section 8 on the bottom of page 5 and on to page 6 is from Senate File 1128, Senator Schmidt. We're establishing the Office of Broadband Development. This is pretty much the bill that has traveled through the policy committees, except for on line 6.11, the proposal here has the office remaining within the Department of Commerce. The bill, as it came to the Finance Committee, was a standalone department, and this proposal keeps them within under the Department of Commerce. The rest of the Section 8 continues on to the next page, 7. And then we have Section 9 starting on page 8. Section 9 and 10 are... For right now, they're placeholders for the Made in Minnesota solar proposal. Right now, we're just carrying the definitions as they are being carried in the energy bill. That's Section 9. Section 10 is establishing the Made in Minnesota solar energy account. Other than that, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't collect or spend any other money right now as the language stands right now in the bill. Section 11 on page 9 is another section that was in the broadband bill from Senator Schmidt. This just clarifies who has to issue the annual reports. Section 12 is a sort of a modification of a proposal that was in Senate File 1243, In previous bienniums, there has been a transfer from the TAM fund to the Legislative Coordinating Commission for closed captioning of legislative broadcasts on the website. And we've always had to make a transfer out of that fund over to the LCC. And sometimes it wasn't part of the governor's proposal this year, but the LCC did request some money again. And what this proposal is doing is making it a statutory appropriation, so that the LCC could work with the Department of Commerce each year and figure out how much money they need for it. And so instead of a transfer out of the account that we have to put into session law each year, this would just be a statutory appropriation. So that is handled on Section 12 and 13 on page 9 and 10. Section 14 is partially a proposal from the governor that was moving some of the petroleum inspection fee over to the Department of Weights and Measures.
The one with commerce.
Within the governor's proposal, no, 8 cents. So it would have moved from 81 to 89 cents on line 10.22. That additional amount would be expended by the Department of Commerce, Weights and Measures, and then that would mean less money is going to the general fund. So we're doing that, but we're upping it by 4 more cents. And then we have the new language on the bottom of page 10 and on to page 11 that would take 5% of that total fee and make it available for people who qualify for weatherization, and that they would it would go for energy equipment grants. And this was in Senate File 895, Hoffman. So we did the governor's proposal. The governor also proposed then raising the fee to compensate the general fund, and this there's not language in this bill doing that. So the this would also not raise the overall petroleum inspection fee. It would just shift more of it over to Weights and Measures and to this other grant program. The last section, or this section 15, is another section dealing with the broadband office, Senator Schmidt's bill. And then the last section 16 is a proposal to from the chairman that any solar project that is installed with money that is appropriated in this bill must be using the Minnesota-made proposal as defined in statute.
Okay. And this one's a work in progress, as you probably know, so there might be some changes to it before it comes out on Monday, and you can study it over the weekend to see if there's anything you like or don't like. But does anybody want to ask any questions about what was just explained? Senator Osmek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm probably doing a preview of where this is coming from, but Section 9, Made in Minnesota, is that funding mechanism going to be in the next bill that we're going to be looking at, or next part of the bill that we're looking at? Or I'm curious where the funding is coming from, because I think we're looking at RDF or some combination.
Yes, there was a combination of RDF and SIP money, I believe. And I think the way it's going to be worded is that there – I don't know that people will be opposed to it, so it should be okay.
We'll see, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, you might be. I don't know. But, but I'm trying to do it so it's the least controversial as possible. So, okay. Who's next? Okay. Well,
Mr. Chair and members, the final document actually has four articles in it, and starting on page 2 of the CDF-002 document, we just have some standard language here, and at the bottom of page 2, we have a rider for the Minnesota Investment Fund, and as was mentioned previously, we'll insert all the dollars later on. On page 3, there's some language that was brought to us from DEED, some language they needed for a biopharmaceutical manufacturing company, and the MIF statutes right now contain some limitations on the amount of loans, so this just makes the loans available for a little higher dollar amount for this business. So that's on page 3, and continuing over to page 4 with some definitions. Let's see, paragraph B is the new Minnesota Job Creation Fund, and the statutory language will show up later in the bill for that. In C, we have some money going to the redevelopment program, and that was not in the governor's bill proposal, but I understand that might be necessary, so it's been included here in the chair's proposal. On paragraph D is the Upper Minnesota Film Office funding, and paragraph E is the funding for the Film and TV Board. These are operating expenses, and previously those were included under Department of Tourism, but since there's also a statutory change later on that has the deed commissioner kind of controlling the jobs production, film production jobs program, so we thought it was better under business and community development. On page 5, we have contaminated site cleanup and development. Paragraph F comes from general fund, and G is from the remediation fund, and these are some some base riders. We have Job Skills Partnership in paragraph H. And then the Film Production Jobs Program actually will go, like as I mentioned, there's some language further on in the bill, but this would go to the Film Production Jobs Program for the Minnesota Film and TV Board. And then in paragraph J, we have Writer for Enterprise Minnesota. And I don't think, Mr. Chair, I don't think you mentioned this, but previously there was a competitive grant program for business and community development that was instituted in, I believe, 2011, and competitive grant programs for adult and youth workforce development. And the Senate proposal, what you see in front of you, does not continue the competitive grant program and instead contains some riders with various groups named to receive general fund and workforce development dollars. So at the bottom of page 5, we have Women Venture receiving in a rider here. On page 6,
Ms. Doyle, just to elaborate on that just a little bit, what I'm thinking of here is that since most of these groups went through a competitive grant already and were determined to qualify, that it was not necessary for them to do another bunch of paperwork to try and get another competitive grant and have the department go through analyzing it. So hopefully we're saving a whole bunch of people a real lot of work since they've already qualified. And there might be a few in here that that maybe didn't qualify for the competitive grant but were getting funded previous to the competitive grant program, and they may be getting some funding in this also.
Mr. Chair, members, continuing on then, and I would also add that it's not included in here, but I believe there's also some money included for administering and monitoring the groups. They need to report some information, so there would be a little bit on the spreadsheet, I think, for that. On page 6, then,
there's less than there was before, though. It was 5% before, and now it's down to 2%, correct?
That's correct, Mr. Okay. Chair. Right. Mr. Chair, members, then, on page 6, we have Metropolitan Economic Development Association, the Biobusiness Alliance in paragraph M, and then this is just contains some rider language about the Biobusiness Alliance continuing to report. That is over on page 7. In paragraph N, we have Minnesota Inventors Congress and a portion going to youth inventors. In paragraph O, we have some language for Rural Policy and Development Center in St. Peter. On page 8, the next few groups were some of the groups that had not traditionally received funding, but they did receive funding through the competitive grant program, so they are also included in this language. Paragraph P is to the North Central Small Business Development Center at Central Lakes College. Paragraph Q is South Central Small Business Development Center at in Mankato. Paragraph R is to the Neighborhood Development Center. Paragraph S is to Arrowhead Economic Opportunity Agency. And paragraph T actually is a Senator Herr proposal. He has a bill, Senate File 1428. This is to the St. Paul East Side Area Business Association. Starting on the bottom of page 8, we have this is for workforce development dollars and programs. The paragraph A is the Minnesota Youth Program, continuing funding to that. On page 9, in paragraph B, we have money for the Youth Build Program. Paragraph C is to Twin Cities Rise to provide training to hard-to-train individuals. Paragraph D, advocating change together, will continue to receive funding. Paragraph E is to Minnesota Diversified Industries. Paragraph F, to Rise, Inc., for the Minnesota Employment Center for People Who Are Deaf or Hard of Hearing. Paragraph G is to Life Track Resources. And over on page 10, paragraph H, Opportunities Industrialization Center Programs. Paragraph I, then we start with some youth programs, to Minneapolis Summer Youth Employment Program. Paragraph J, to the Boys and Girls Clubs. Paragraph K at the bottom of 10 is to fund summer youth employment in St. Paul. Over to page 11 in paragraph L, we have grants to provide interpreters for a regional transition program specializing in culturally appropriate transition services for employment for deaf and hard of hearing and deafblind students. On paragraph M, we have, this is also a few groups now that are coming up were groups that received money through the competitive grant process, and they will continue to receive money under this bill. In paragraph M, to Central Minnesota Jobs and Training Service. Paragraph N, Goodwill Easter Seals. Paragraph O, to International Institute of Minnesota. Paragraph P, Project for Pride in Living, Inc. Paragraph Q, to Resource Pathway to Advancement. And over to page 12, we have SOAR Careers, Duluth, Minnesota Manufacturing Pathways. Paragraph S, to Southwest Minnesota Private Industry Council. Paragraph T, this was actually a Senator Desick bill, Senate File 432, for a grant to the African Development Center. And then they're located in several areas, Minneapolis, St. Cloud, Wilmer, Mankato, and Rochester. And this is actually a one-time appropriation. And I was going to mention that the groups that received through the competitive grant and that are also in here are going to be continuing on into the tail, so that they were getting base funding. In paragraph U, this is a youth program, Northeast Minnesota Office of Job Training for the Career Adventure Program. In paragraph V, to South Central Workforce Council, Minnesota Valley Action Council. Subdivision 4 is General Support Services for DEED. Subdivision 5 is the Minnesota Trade Office within DEED. And then there are a couple of new programs in paragraphs A and B. There's the STEP, State Trade and Export Promotion Grants Program, and there's some statutory language that comes later in the bill that we'll see. And then the Invest Minnesota Marketing Initiative from the Trade Office. On page 13 on Subdivision 6, we have the vocational rehabilitation, and paragraph A is for the vocational rehabilitation program. And then in paragraph B, we have Centers for Independent Living for grants to Centers for Independent Living. Paragraph C and D are for extended employment. In section 4, we start with the Housing Finance Agency. And all of this language, except for one subdivision here, comes from Governor's Bill. And also that's Senator Dietzick, Senate File 1057. So the total appropriation will be included. And over onto page 14, we've got the Challenge Program funding. And then that's, as I mentioned, that's all base rider language that's appeared before and was also in the Governor's Bill. On page 15, Subdivision 3, to the Housing Trust Fund. Subdivision 4 at the bottom of 15 is Rental Assistance for Mentally Ill. Subdivision 5, Family Homeless Prevention, Home Ownership Assistance Fund, Affordable Rental Investment Fund, and Subdivision 7. And then on page 17, the Subdivision 8, actually, this subdivision comes from Senator Dibble's Senate File 811, and I believe the intent is to include some owner-occupied loans in here. It says rehabilitation of single-family homes. So that's where that subdivision came from. Page 17, then continuing at the bottom, we've got Subdivision 9 for HECAT, Subdivision 10, capacity building grants. Section 5 on page 18 is the standard language, rider language for Department of Labor and Industry. We've got workers' compensation and continuing the Vinland Center grants for rehabilitation services. Subdivision 3 is labor standards and apprenticeship. And in paragraph B is actually some new language that was in the governor's bill. This is for a child labor initiative for expanding education and outreach to high schools to educate minors regarding workforce safety. Paragraph C is also for the apprenticeship program, and then paragraph D is the continuing of the prevailing wage enforcement. There's some money in, subdivision 4 is for workplace safety, and this comes from Workers' Compensation Fund and general support also from Workers' Compensation Fund. Section 6 is for Explore Minnesota Tourism, and as I mentioned before, the Upper Minnesota Film Board and the Film and TV Board is now moved under the DEED Business and Community Development. So this is language was in the governor's bill in 1057. So continuing over to page 20, also that language for Explore Minnesota Tourism talks about I think it's a new incentive program. And so it has a little language there from the governor's bill. And We included some language on base funding going forward for Explore Minnesota Tourism there at the end on 2015 to 2017. For the in Section 7, Bureau of Mediation Services, this is standard rider language and standard language or language that came from the governor's bill, page 20 over to 21. Then we have the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. This was also in the governor's bill, Senate filed 1057 from Senator Dietzick. There is some money and some rider language in here about the Office of Enterprise Technology. They're going to be upgrading their case management system, so there will be some money for that on the spreadsheets. That is Article 1. Now, Article 2 is labor and industry, and much of this article comes from a lot of it is regarding elevators. Some of it's from the governor's bill, and some of it's from actually from a Senator Tomasoni, Senate File 549. So I will point out those different sections. The first section and actually sections 1 through 14 are from Senate File 549, which is Senator Tomasoni's, and this sets up a new process and definitions for an elevator licenses. So that is in Section 1 and then 2, and then we continue over, and then there are some definitions of elevator contractors and elevator work. That's on page 23, 24, and just more definitions, 25, more definitions. And Section 14 actually sets out sort of the licensing scheme, and it continues from 25 and 26, more licensing and qualifications for these individuals, 27, continuing on, 28, 29. And this bill was heard in the Jobs Industry Jobs Committee and was sent to Finance. And so I've received several amendments that have been worked out between the various groups, and they've been incorporated here, and I will hear from them if they aren't incorporated.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Squark.
Thank you. With regard to the elevator provision,
sorry,
number of years ago I did a fair amount of work with regard to man lifts in rural elevators, and we compromised on some language that would allow those folks to do some work on these man lifts without this degree of supervision and licensure. I want to make sure that that effort that I did a number of years ago is not being eliminated by this elevator provision.
That's well taken, Senator Scoy. As far as I know, everybody's agreed to this. And so I'm not sure if the group you're talking about.
Well, Mr. Chair, and Senator Scoy, I think back further on in the bill, there's in Section 17, it talks about on line 33. I mean, we can talk about this later. I think it talks about that hand-powered man lifts and electric endless belt man lifts and vertical reciprocating conveyors are not subject to, well, this is permit fees, but I don't believe any of that is being changed. This is just a new licensure. That there's some issues with the electrician license and being an elevator, getting an elevator license. So, but perhaps, you know, if there's an issue, the department could possibly address that.
Sure. Well, Mr. Chair, the department wasn't always so supportive of my effort. So, this is the language that we were working on here, this hand-powered man lifts, electric endless belt man lifts. This is the stuff. And these folks were not going to be subject to all of this complicated permitting and inspection fees. So I'd like to make sure that
that's fine.
Maintains.
Concur, Mr. Chair, if we could just carve out a little time to focus on that.
We can absolutely do that. This is not intended to be controversial, so if it is, we should fix it. Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, we're on page 30, and I'm just going to continue on because this is kind of talking about all of the licensure, and this language has been worked out between the various groups. Page 31, continuing on. And then when we get to page 32, we're starting with some Department of Labor and Industry provisions from Senate File 1057. And as I mentioned, these are some provisions that do deal with elevators but are not part of this licensure. But I think they're trying to simplify some things with regard to permits. So for it talks about permits issued are valid for 12 months in Section 15. In Section 16, this was also from the governor's bill, Senate File 1057. It specifies some elevator inspection fees. And these are just, I think, some streamlining initiatives. In Section 17, this is also from Senate File 1057, the governor's bill, and that's the section we were just speaking about. This adds vertical reciprocating conveyors to not require the subsequent operating permit fee. They would require the initial operating permit fee, but not a subsequent permit fee. The next section 18, is from the elevator licensure bill from Senator Tomasoni's Senate File 549. And these are some clarifying sections, and you'll see on line 33.23 that it's striking electricians to make it more specific, because they're really trying to differentiate between elevator licensing and electrician, what licenses they need. On section 19, this is also from Senate File 549, and they're clarifying regarding the elevator licensing. Section 20, this is more from Senate File 549. Let's see, the change is over on the bottom of page 36. And it's regarding whether or not who needs to be licensed while they're performing elevator work. And this is within the Minnesota Electrical Act. So they're just, trying to clarify who needs to get what and who's not licensed for electrician and not for elevators. And so at the bottom of page 36, section 29, this is also from Senate File 549, on line 37.22, it's just a different reference to the new law regarding elevator licensing. On page 37, this comes from the Senate Governor's Bill, Senate File 1057. This is a calculation of fees for utility interconnected wind generation installations. Senate Section 23 on page 38 is also from Senate File 1057. And this is eliminates fees over on page 39, eliminates fees for accelerated reviews. I understand they're not going to be doing that anymore. And I think they're just not going to do the accelerated review and try to do all reviews on an accelerated basis. Section 24 is also from Senate File 1057, and this clarifies and sets out plumbing fees. I believe they were in rule before, and you'll see that in the repealers in the back. Page 40, Section 25. This relates to some combative sports fee changes. I don't know, and this is from the governor's initiative, Senate File 1057. As some of you may recall, the Department of Labor and Industry now has combative sports under their purview, so that's why this is included in the bill here. On page 41, we have the repealers in Section 26. The first one, it relates to the inspection fees that are now going to be in statute. I think I mentioned that previously for the plumbing fees. And then paragraph B is repeals some definitions relating to the elevator licenses. Article 3 is the employment and economic development, and that starts at the bottom of 41. And this first section is from Senator Bonoff, Senate File 899, this labor market information data production requirement. And it's going to require the DEED in collaboration with Office of Higher Education to publish some labor market data analysis to more closely align different occupations that are and job trends to closely align what is needed in the workforce. On page 42 at the bottom, or section 2, is a department provision from Senate File 1057. It makes a few changes to the Minnesota Investment Fund Program. Section 3 also is from the governor's Senate File 1057, Senator Dietzick's bill. This is some more additional changes to the Minnesota Investment Fund. At the bottom of page 43, section 4, this is the creation of a Minnesota Job Creation Fund, and this was also included in Senate File 1057. That, 43, page 44, discusses more about the qualifications and defines what businesses would qualify for the program. Over on page 45, 46, it talks about how a business can get certified for the program. 47, it's continuing on, and I've also been working with Deed on some changes they've needed to this section. Page 47, that continues over to page 48. It talks about the job creation award, and then there is some rulemaking, but this did go to state and local government. Page 48, there's a section 5 is from Senator Hoffman's Senate File 640. This is a Trade Policy Advisory Council, and this language is from the third engrossment, and I even made an additional change. So this has made it through. It just got out of rules the other day. So this section should be good to go on the Trade Policy Advisory Council that's being created. That continues over to page 49 and 50. In section 6, this is the Minnesota Trade Offices and Foreign Markets. It allows, this is, came from a Senate File 1057, Senator Dietzick. This would allow the trade offices to expand to 3 new foreign offices. And it kind of sets out what the offices can do. So that continues over to page 51. Section 7 is also from Senate File 1057, the governor's bill. This is Minnesota STEP grants. I discussed this earlier under the trade office, the State Trade and Export Promotion Grants Program. This is also part of Section 8, was discussed under the Trade Office for the Invest Minnesota Marketing Initiative. Section 9 comes from Senator Bonoff, Senate File 899, and this is some more of that labor workforce data. So that is Section 9, and continuing over to page 52. Section 10 is another Senator Bonoff bill, Senate File 352. This is the Film Production Jobs Program. And one thing this section does is it moves oversight and control of the Minnesota Film and TV Board from the Commissioner of Administration to the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development. And then it just makes some changes to the program and some changes some percentages and where production costs are incurred, and that's over on page 53 in the last paragraph. Section 11 on page 53 comes from Senate File 899. That's Senator Bonoff. This is also relating to the labor market data information collaboration with the MNSCU. On page 53 at the bottom, section 12 comes from Senator Tomasoni's Senate File 644, and this is relating to support services for persons with mental illness. And these are some tweaks to the program that were requested by NAMI. Page 54, section 13, comes from Senator Tomasoni's Senate File 602. And these are some provisions, the chair's proposal to put in here regarding unemployment benefits that are to be paid during when an applicant starts working because of a lockout. And then that continues on into section 14, more information on an applicant who's eligible due to lockout. And that continues in section 15.
Senator Westrom.
When you say lockout, what are you referring to?
Lockout is... Well, it is defined in statute. I could look that up. It's let me see if it's included in here. Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, can I look up?
Yeah,
can we look that up and we'll get back to you? I'm not exactly sure how it is defined, but we'll get back to you.
Is it related to unemployment benefits?
Well, this is right. If a person is part of a lockout, they right now I don't believe they would be allowed to collect unemployment benefits. And
okay.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Knopf. We have the definition, Mr. Chair, members. So the lockout is defined as the refusal of the employer to furnish work to employees as a result of a labor dispute.
Okay, and what would the change be?
Mr. Chair, members, currently, what I'm understanding is that currently, if you're not working because of a labor dispute, that you would not be eligible for additional unemployment benefits. And so this would change eligibility during if you are in a lockout situation where you're not able to work because of a labor dispute.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, and just on that issue,
55.
I heard this. Is this related to a sugar beet processing issue up in northwest Minnesota?
I believe it might be.
And I'd heard the Senate, our House had added a 3-year option for unemployment benefits. Are we doing the same thing here, or what's what are we talking about here?
Mr. Chair, members, I don't believe we have that included in this language. This is a more general lockout language, but I'm not certain. I'm not familiar with the provision from the House, so I'd have to look at that.
Maybe you can just follow up with me after.
I will.
Thanks.
We are at the bottom of page 56, and I think I finished with that. Section 16 is also part of Senate File 602. On page 57, we continue with Senate File 644. This is Senator Tomasoni's Employment Support Services for Persons with Mental Illness. Just a few changes to the language and who qualifies for the program. That is also in Section 18. Continuing over to page 58, just a few more language changes that help clarify who's eligible and how to qualify for the program. Page 59, section 19, that is a governor's initiative from Senate File 1057, Senator Dietzick's bill, unemployment insurance and employer tax reduction. Section 20 comes from Senator Bonoff's Senate File 899. This is it establishes pilot programs for that labor market information and is for a few workforce service areas, Hennepin Carver, Northeast Minnesota, Stearns, Benton, and the rural Minnesota SEP. Section 21 is also from Senate File 602, Senator Tomasoni, regarding lockouts. Then that concludes Article 3. Mr. Chair, members, I'll continue with Article 4, and then we can take questions after that. Article 4 is some miscellaneous economic development provisions. Section 1 is language. It's a chair's proposal regarding, when practicable, public entities shall purchase paper that has been made on a paper machine located in Minnesota. Section 2 is from Senator Dietzick, Senate File 735. And this is a new subdivision that would be in the Bureau of Mediation Services statute, and it would allow grants to be made to private nonprofit entities that assist in resolution of disputes. Continuing over to page 62, Section 3, this is also some language that's a chair's proposal regarding the IRRB, and it would exempt the IRRB from a few provisions. If you look at 62.12, it would allow the commissioner to utilize contracting options that are available for municipalities. That's the site for 471.345. And then also would not subject the agency to these sections that are cited, the 16E.016. This would exempt the person who does the IT for the agency to not be an employee of OET, and there are several other agencies that are also exempted, and this would just include the IRRB. And then 16C.05 relates to contract management working with the Commissioner of Management. Section 4 is a chair's proposal regarding distribution to school districts. That continues over. The language, I think, changes over on page 64, distributions for school districts. And then some other changes on the bottom of 64, just some clarifying language. Page 65, section 5, it is regarding a distribution to the city of Eveleth. Section 6 is from Senate File 411, this is a Senator Dibble bill regarding contracts for deed. And it as I understand it, this bill, Senate File 411, is on the floor. However, it doesn't have a companion in the House, and so we have included it in here. And what Senate File 411 does is provide some information and notice requirements for contracts for deed that are involved in real property sales. In Section 7, it discusses, you know, who would be subject to this. I believe it's for multiple sellers who are involved in more selling four or more contracts for deed during a 12-month period. So if you continue over on 65 and 66 in Section 8, it talks about the notice requirements. On 67, it provides the specific language that needs to be included. And this just will prevent some issues that have been going on with multiple sellers involving contracts for deed. This is, as I mentioned, this is on the floor of the Senate. Over on page 68.
Senator Westrom.
On that issue, trying to recall, it seems to me we maybe heard a little about that, but does this have anything? Can you give me just a little more background on that, or maybe it's too complicated and something we should talk about offline? But.
Oh, Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble.
Senator Dibble, you know the answer.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. This is about folks who have started a fairly vigorous business. There's a new way of selling houses that has cropped up in the last few years, partly in response to the foreclosure crisis. We also find the phenomenon, at least in the city of Minneapolis, a number of folks who were previously offering properties as rental have now started offering them as contract for deed in order to get around our rental standards in Minneapolis. And so, and finding lots and lots of failure to disclose, a lot of folks who are entering into these arrangements don't even know they're really entering into a contract for deed per se. It's being represented that they're actually renting a property, not understanding that they're taking on all the full obligations of home ownership, the standard inspections, title research, disclosures, all kinds of things just aren't being achieved. Trying to preserve the ability for folks to sell on contract for deed on a limited basis, because it's still a pretty effective tool between families or people know each other, or folks who do this on occasion. That's a private transaction that we don't want to get into. But when folks are doing four or more per year, we want they're clearly getting into the business of selling properties as contracts, on a contract for deed basis, and so we want to make sure that they're providing proper disclosure and making sure that we're providing a forum so that the buyers know what they're getting into. I had one other thought, and it just escaped me. But it's basically a consumer protection effort. This does not apply to people who are represented by an attorney or by a real estate agent. These are folks who are kind of on their own with the seller entering into a contract for deed.
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, and your staff, what is the new requirement? What happens if you're selling four or more contract for deeds in a year? What is the new standard?
The crux of the bill is a form is put on top of the purchase agreement. It provides for a waiting period, a few days waiting period. A disclosure form is
placed.
For
a rescission?
I'm sorry?
A rescission when you say waiting periods?
Before a purchase agreement, when a purchase agreement is offered, then there's a five-day waiting period before a signature is required and the purchase agreement goes into effect, so that folks can have this opportunity to read this document that's placed on top of the purchase agreement that has some specific language that would need to be included, just so that folks know exactly what they're getting into. So that's the crux of the bill is disclosure. So, and disclosure comes in the form of a document that the buyer is given, and it lays out a few specific items like, know what you're getting into. You're getting into a home purchase situation. You have to pay property taxes. You may be responsible for repairs, depending on what the terms of the purchase agreement are. There's a balloon payment coming up. If you can't pay that, you need to find alternative form of financing. You should get some advice from a professional You have the opportunity within 5 business days to cancel this purchase agreement, et cetera, et cetera.
Mr. Chair, just one or two more questions. Senator Dibble, is what is the penalty if somebody does this unknowingly, doesn't have this disclosure, 2 years down the road, does it cancel the sale potentially? Does it penalize them with $1,000 fine possible? Just what happens there?
I guess there are remedies if there's a failure to disclose. Hang on one sec. I'm just pulling it out of the bill here. A purchaser has a right of private action against what we call a multiple seller. These are folks who sell 4 or more per year. The greater of actual damages or statutory damages of $2,500 and reasonable attorney's fees and court costs. A multiple seller who knowingly fails to timely deliver the notice required is liable for triple the actual or statutory damages. The purchaser, however, must elect, they can't go for multiple types of relief or remedy under either, just a failure or a knowing failure to provide the notice. Like that would go to intent. There's a time limit. Action must be commenced within 4 years. The violation has no effect on the validity of the contract once the purchase agreement is executed. It does not cancel the purchase. I think that answers one of your questions.
And you're, Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, you're saying if the party goes through an attorney, either party goes through an attorney, this doesn't apply,
if the purchaser is represented by a real estate agent or an attorney, the provisions of this new requirements do not apply.
I see. I'd like to talk to you offline a little bit more, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator.
I'm a little concerned, but thank you for that insight.
Yeah, we just found out that Senator Saxhock, well, we didn't think we'd be here till 3, but Senator Saxhock has the room at 3, so we get to just kind of run through the
interview. Mr. Chair, I just thought I'd mention I was going to, on this disclosure document that would be stapled to the top of the purchase agreement, I have 2 more tiny little pieces I'm going to bring in.
Okay.
Amendment.
Like I told everybody before, this is kind of a work in progress, mm-hmm. So we'll be fixing it up before it gets here on Monday and maybe fixing it up even a little bit more on Monday. So go ahead, Karen.
Mr. Chair, members, we are at the bottom of page 69 in section 10. This is some distribution language, and I do have a change that I will make on page 70. On line 70.4, it should be 0.9 of a cent, not 0.09 per ton to Grand Rapids. So I will change that in the next document.
Grand Rapids was really happy for a little.
They were. I'm glad I recalculated it. So, and then the rest of it is some school bonds that we will be funding through the agency itself. But then you have the River Center language that you can tell them about.
Mr. Chair, members, on page 71, section 12, this is St. Paul River Center Arena. It's some forgiveness language. What happens here is that in fiscal years 2014 and 15, the payments will be reduced by $500,000 each year. Then in 16 and 17, no repayments are required. And then after that, for the remaining term of the loan, the money that's paid from the lessee to the city of St. Paul, the intent here is to not have the payments due to the state from the city for the remainder of the term of the loan. However, the intent is to have the lessee continue to make the payments to the city of St. Paul. However, that money must be used to pay for or finance improvements to the project list for the Excel Arena, for the River Center. Okay. So hopefully, if that doesn't work, we can change that. That was the intent of the language.
And then the repealers?
Repealers are repealing. Most of it is all dealing with the Repealing Science and Technology Authority. And then on the 71.13 is the relating to Senator Dibble's bills, just a penalty provision that's included within the new language for the contract for deed.
Any quick questions from anybody, Senator Osmek?
Omnibus Game and Fish, I didn't see a lot in here. Is that riding separately, or is that going to be coming in with this?
That's coming in later. The legacy stuff is coming in later. And what else? LCCMR. So, and there's then there's the energy bill that the omnibus energy bill that is here that'll be coming up on April 22nd. Anything else?
And then one final comment. We had had in committee previously in Senator Marty's committee under the repealer for the state tree nursery program. We had actually had, I thought, better language, so much more of a compromise. This seems to be a revert back to more strict definitions. I guess I'd suggest that we should look at what was passed out and be more attuned to that.
We're a very fair and open committee here, so take a look at anything you want. All right, and so this will all be online. Like I said, it's a work in progress, and we're going to try and keep peace in the valley as much as we possibly can here. And I want to thank you all for coming, and we have to get out of this room, so we're going to adjourn the meeting. And I am really, really nervous about letting this sit over the weekend without doing anything, but we're going to do that, and so you can all check the language and see what you like and don't like. We'll have numbers and a spreadsheet on Monday, and we'll be meeting on Monday to put the bill together and try and pass it out of this committee. So thank you all very much, and meeting adjourned.